Insulation weather.
A giant dome of summer high pressure taking over, and these things are tough to move out on this Saturday. It's sunny, it's hot, it's humid. A touch of a breeze from the south doesn't help much. 98 for the high. Heat index 105 to 107. Hottest part of the day, 3 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The record for today, 98 from 1988. Tonight, clear, warm, humid, 78. Sunday, sunny, hot, and humid. This is 97.1 FM Talk. Chief Meteorologist, Dave Murray.
Experiencing history in real time every day.
Every day.
This is St. Louis's own 97.1 FM Talk.
The following is a paid program.
On the Money provides general information which may not apply to your personal investment situation. Investing is subject to risk, including the possible loss of principal. You should consult with your financial professional prior to making any investment decisions. Investment products and services are offered through Stifel Nicolaus & Company, Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE. Neither Stifel nor its financial professionals are legal or tax advisors. Bob Stockdale is Senior Vice President, Investments, and Eric Robert is Director, Investments with the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel. If you need assistance with your investments or have questions about the show, contact us at 636-695-2650 or go to clearpathinvesting.com.
Good morning. Welcome to On the Money. I'm Bob Stockdale, Senior Vice President Investments at Stifel, along with Eric Robert, Director of Investments at Stifel. And we're part of the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel, and we are thrilled to have you with us today. Lots going on. You know, it seems like we say that every week. Lots going on. There's been a lot going on. I mean, someday we're going to come in here and we're going to say, well, not much to talk about today.
It's been a while.
It's been it's been a long time, right?
Yeah, but there is a lot going on. We've got the whole situation with Iran and Israel, and on and off again with where the U.S. stands in that. We'll update you on some of that. Importantly, we're going to take a look at while we don't know how this one's going to play out, and that isn't that how it always is when these things crop up. We do know a lot about how situations of this nature, major geopolitical events and historical events, have impacted markets in the past, and we're going to give you some updates on that. I've got a little bit of a mea culpa here, Bob.
Sure.
If you remember, last week we kept saying, we being me in this case, we kept saying we were going to talk about a common question we get from listeners and clients, which is there an order to how to take your money out in retirement, from what types of accounts and in what order? And the answer is yes. We said we were going to talk about it, but we ran out of time. So we're going to take another
swing at
it.
Talk about it today.
Hopefully we'll actually deliver on that this
time. Sure, yeah. And of course, we had the Fed last week.
We did. And we'll get you updated with what the Fed didn't do, in case you didn't hear. They didn't cut rates, but we did learn a little bit.
Gave it away.
Well, that's not really the news at this point, but we want to dive in a little bit more on what some of the commentary was from Fed Chair Jerome Powell, as well as the White House and certain occupants of the White House and his thoughts on what they're doing. We're also going to get into the issue of, hold on, my stories got out of order here. There was a great article on how to manage getting through volatile times in the news cycle. So not so much the market, although the market has been volatile at times this year. But you know, how do you manage your behavior as an investor whenever the whole world just seems like it's upside down at times? And that has seemed more often the case than not in recent years, depending on who you ask. We'll give you some thoughts of our thoughts, as well as some from an author that we regularly check in with on the show a little bit later.
Yeah, and Eric, for fourth segment today, we've got something that's going to be fun and interesting.
Yeah.
16 creative, weird, and downright bizarre ways people make extra cash that will make you say, why didn't I think of that?
That is a Bob Stockdale fourth segment.
Oh, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, lots more to cover. Let's go ahead and start diving in here. We'll get started with some of the economic data for this week. We did see Manufacturing figures on Monday. Monday, the Empire State Manufacturing Index had a bit of a surprise to the downside, coming in at a negative 16 versus the median forecast of a negative 6.0% print. Wouldn't take so. By the way, that's a survey of manufacturers in the state of New York, so it's not exactly looking at the whole country here. The number did come in below expectations, but it's a noisy number generally. Not too much of a market reaction as a response to that. On Tuesday, however, we did see a more notable print with the U.S. retail sales figure. Sales at U.S. retailers for the month of May fell 0.9%, which was more than expected. We saw issues due to the trade problems that are going on. The chief cause of poor sales was fewer automobile purchases. Car buyers flocked to dealers in March, trying to get ahead of tariffs, and that's left kind of a lull in the aftermath there.
Sure.
Moving on to other data, did see
Wednesday.
Well, Wednesday was the big FOMC announcement, or lack thereof. No news. no change to the rates, and
sure.
I saw an interesting article earlier this week, Bob, from Bloomberg, which we've been discussing, not on the air, but just generally, that showed the members of the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee. So those are the Fed policymakers who actually vote on rates at any given time. And here's what I thought was interesting about it. What Bloomberg did is they ranked the FOMC members, both voting and non-voting, by how either hawkish or dovish they are. And hawkish means they're more inclined to keep rates higher or maybe even increase rates from here. Dovish would mean they're more inclined to be cutting rates in this environment or think we're maybe behind the eight ball. And I say this because I think for a lot of people out there that are just watching the news and taking things as they come, I think a lot of people think that Fed Chair Jerome Powell gets to decide what the rate is, but he's just one member who votes on the FOMC. Now, he has to represent the entire committee and the entire Federal Reserve. It just so happens that, at least according to this Bloomberg analysis, Powell is actually the third most dovish member of the FOMC at this time. And that kind of made me chuckle because I was thinking, he's taken all the arrows from President Trump and others in the media for being too hawkish and too late.
Well, he is
Powell.
The chairman.
Mm-hmm. And I just wonder what his internal dialogue is, because Fed chairs are typically not really wired to say what they think out loud. We call it Fed speak. They use a lot of words to say almost nothing, and I think Powell is pretty good at that. I just thought that was interesting that he's actually on the more dovish side. He's only I misspoke. He's actually the fourth most dovish of voting members. Christopher Waller on the Fed Board of Governors is the most dovish, followed by Lisa Cook and Philip Jefferson, then Fed Chair Powell, and all other voting members and non-voting are on the more hawkish side. But it actually shows that you've got about one more voting FOMC member, including Chair Powell, that's on the dovish side of the dial versus the hawkish side of the dial. That hasn't resulted in any rate cuts, obviously, but maybe that could give us a little hope that there's some bandwidth here in the future.
Yeah, sure. Well, Eric, of course, I think everybody knows who follows the Fed. The Fed is not supposed to be political in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're very careful about how they couch things when they're on the air talking, different Fed governors and that sort of thing. But you have to wonder, things like that make you wonder, because I think there is, some people would present a case right now that says you should be cutting rates now.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that happened last week, the housing starts and permits dropped to a 5-year low.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some things that are starting to fall apart a little bit, on the economy. But no action from the Fed. So I can understand some people being concerned about that.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, with the most recent CPI data, while the headline numbers still remain modestly elevated above the Fed's long-term 2% target, the way that CPI and PCE inflation, which is what the Fed follows, is calculated is they use a thing called owner's equivalent rent to quantify housing prices. Well, owner's equivalent rent, what that means is what would it cost for you to rent your own home in the open market, which isn't what people do in reality.
Right.
And
yes.
Owner's equivalent rent is really the only thing that's keeping our headline inflation numbers elevated at this point. You know, after the last week, you might see a little bit of a pop from energy prices, depending
right.
on how this yep. stuff.
636-695-2650. That's clearpathinvesting.com or 636-695-2650. Stiefel Nicholas & Company Incorporated, member NYSC and SIPC.
Accidents can happen in the blink of an eye, especially in a busy city like St. Louis. Whether you're a rideshare driver or passenger, injuries can leave you feeling lost, confused, and unsure of where to turn. At Kauffman Townsley, we understand. We're from here. We live in St. Louis, and we know what it takes to fight for the rights of our neighbors. We're here to help you through the difficult time with the experience and care you deserve. Kauffman Townsley, real people, real results. Call 314-500-5000. That's 314-500-5000.
Mark Cox here for my friends at Home Shield Foundation Repairs. When it comes to uneven concrete in and around your house, they can use their polyjacking equipment and level up your sidewalk, your driveway, even your basement floor. Matt Hayes, the owner, has shown me some incredible videos of erosion that can happen in your soil. But Matt can take care of that in a heartbeat. He's worked with a lot of my listeners, and we appreciate it. They offer lifetime warranties on all of their work and do waterproofing as well. Go to Home Shield Foundation.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we're fighting against childhood cancer every day. At the heart of this battle are our donors.
Most of us want to make some type of difference in the lives of others. St. Jude does miraculous work.
The fact that no one has to pay, it's a place where everyone is treated as an equal.
Everybody is welcome here, and it doesn't matter your religion or what part of the world you're from, all that is taken away. It just gives you some hope.
It's just a nice feeling to put your energy into something that really does genuinely make a difference in a child's life.
There's just no greater gift. If we have the ability to help, then we have a responsibility to help.
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Find out how you can help at stjude.org.
Welcome back to On the Money, brought to you by the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stiefel.
Hey, welcome back. This is On the Money. I'm Bob Stockdale, along with Eric Robert. We're part of the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stiefel. And we have two partners, Mark Reardon and Jason Becker. They're both senior vice presidents. And you know, there's a lot going on in the world right now. A lot of people start thinking about their portfolios when they see a lot of uncertainty. They see volatility in the market. And that might be a signal that you need to have a review or a second opinion on your portfolio. Because if you're not comfortable or you don't know whether you're comfortable or not yet, it's a good time to call us. Give us a call. Set up something. We'll sit down with you, go over what you're doing, talk about the things that you're having issues with. If you need a financial plan, we'll do that. We do those for free, believe it or not. But we'd love to sit down, have a chance to show you how we do things, give you an opinion on your investments, and I think you'll find it very beneficial.
Happy to do that. ClearPathInvesting.com, ClearPathInvesting.com, or you can give us a call at 636-695-2650. We are going to get to a review of major geopolitical events and how the market performed here in just a moment. I just want to call out one thing that it's just timely because it was news this week, but it's also a case study in thinking, people thinking they know what's going to happen in the future, and then just getting kicked in the shins, which we don't take joy in, but this was kind of a setup. So you may have seen some news this past week that the Senate, you know, they're working through their negotiations on the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, the tax reconciliation bill for the tax cuts. And one of the political footballs that's in that is what to do with green energy subsidies that were largely passed under the so-called Inflation Reduction Act under the Biden administration that really worked in tons of subsidies for various green energy, you know, sources. So things like hydropower and nuclear power and solar power and so forth. In the latest version, from this week at least, of the Senate negotiations, the Senate version of the GOP bill appears to be keeping many of the clean energy subsidies in place with one glaring exception.
I bet I know what it is.
You want to take a stab?
Electric vehicles.
No.
Really?
No. Has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Solar energy. So I'm not sure why, although I can venture a guess as to why, but solar energy has been presented to many investors as the sure thing. If you just wait long enough, you know, everything's going to be running off of solar energy. And, you know, maybe that winds up being true. There's been tremendous investment in this space, and there are a lot of very smart people, including people like Elon Musk, who feel strongly that solar energy is hands down the most appropriate way to invest for long-term renewable energy. But clearly that is not believed by everybody. So the bill, all it does is phase out solar and wind energy tax credits that were added under the Inflation Reduction Act, and it's phasing them out sooner than they otherwise would have been, because these subsidies were supposed to remain in place through 2028 and or through 2032. But this would phase them out sooner than that in 2028. That caused a huge downdraft in a number of publicly traded companies that are in the solar industry. We don't really get into specific companies for this purpose here. Just letting you know, if that's been part of your investment portfolio, you might want to give it a check. We're not making any recommendations as to what to do here. But, you know, I know people who, you know, sometimes I'd have to you go back and forth with them a little bit from a portfolio management standpoint. You were wanting to bet the farm on this sort of thing. And at times, you might have looked really, really smart, because some of these names went up a whole lot following the Inflation Reduction Act. And then in a single day, many of them dropped not just 10 or 15%, but 20, 40, and 50 plus percent. Bam, gone in a day.
Now, we don't know that that's going to be the outcome.
We don't. This isn't...
The bill hasn't passed.
This is proposed legislation.
Right.
There's a back and forth.
But it shows you how quickly things can change.
Absolutely.
And if you're over-concentrated in any position, that can really hurt your portfolio.
And not just any individual position. If you've got a theme of positions in your portfolio, maybe you own a whole bunch of all of them, but it starts representing a large portion of your overall portfolio, you just need to manage it. You need to understand, in the Donald Rumsfeld sense, what your known unknowns are and your unknown unknowns, and manage things appropriately. No, you know, there's just often little to benefit from taking huge bets on concentrated anything, whether it's a sector, an industry, individual company, because if you look at the broader economy, there's so many good things to invest in over the long term. They're not all going to work well at the same time often, but you know, those, it's just not necessary to do well over the long term.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think for most people, a diversified portfolio makes much more sense than trying to really kill it out there and put yourself in a position where if you have a few stocks or a few sectors that don't do well, that could really hurt your portfolio and really hurt your retirement or your plans for a coming retirement. It's not necessary.
Yeah.
You know, for most people, you diversify, do the right things, much better idea.
There you go. So shifting gears now to what's going on with Iran and Israel, and the U.S. is obviously a stakeholder in all of this, and it's evolving. So, I apologize as we're on the air if we're not fully up to date with whatever's being posted on Truth Social at the moment. We just can't watch it all at the same time. We're going to keep this as up to date as possible. We're not also not doing geopolitical analysis. We're talking about the investment implications. We don't know yet how this situation in Iran is going to unfold. And just because it's looked like it's all gone pretty swimmingly so far, doesn't mean it's going to stay that way, because this could wind up being a longer term issue that we have to deal with. But there's always there's some common reactions that people have when these major geopolitical events kick off. And one common reaction that I see is people going, you know what, why don't I just wait to see how this turns out before I make any decisions? That's not always a bad idea, because if you're already invested well for your situation and maybe you have some cash on the side, or you're thinking about putting something to work and you decide you just want to take a beat and see where things settle, that might or might not work out well for you. I know a lot of people who, as we were headed into last weekend, and this was just getting kicked off with Iran and Israel, they were like, why don't we just wait and see how the weekend goes and get through this and not, buy anything? And then go figure, we wound up being up nicely on Monday. Pulled back on Tuesday, finished a little bit closer to flatline on Wednesday. So, I'm sorry, we were down on Wednesday, up on Tuesday, flatline on Monday was how that worked. But you just don't know. You would think, and I was in this camp too, that Israel's flying jets over Iran, knocking out air defense systems, bombing nuclear sites. Yeah. Well, you'd think that would set up for a pretty volatile day in the stock market, and it just didn't turn out to be the case. You just don't know with these things.
You can't always explain what the market does.
That's old news now. That was a few months ago, and things have really largely healed, and we're in a decent space. So if this is giving you that kind of sinking feeling in your stomach, that might be a sign that your portfolio isn't quite in line with your true risk tolerance when you start worrying about how things might impact your portfolio and what your downside risk looks like. That's a time to check on your portfolio and make, the time to make those changes is when things are going okay, in the markets at least, if not geopolitically. I'd say right now isn't necessarily a bad time to consider that. So we'd be happy to help you. Next on the Money, we're going to talk a little bit about how you can manage the noise of what is going on in the media and what's going on in the news, and in terms of managing your own assets, as well as we're going to make an attempt here to give you the Reader's Digest summary on how to take money out of your various types of investment accounts in retirement. That's all next. This is On the Money.
Air Comfort Service Heating, Cooling, and Insulation. Weather.
A giant dome of summer high pressure taking over, and these things are tough to move out on this Saturday. It's sunny, it's hot, it's humid. A touch of a breeze from the south doesn't help much. 98 for the high. Heat index 105 to 107. Hottest part of the day, 3 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The record for today, 98 from 1988. Tonight, clear, warm, humid, 78. Sunday, sunny, hot, and humid. This is 97.1 FM Talk. Chief Meteorologist Dave Murray.
Another RX Watch, brought to you by Underlaw. There's an evil new twist in the tragic story of baby powder and its link to ovarian cancer. Recently uncovered documents reveal that talc can contain asbestos.
The same asbestos that we know causes mesothelioma.
Right, and ovarian cancer.
In the 1970s, the industry wrote its own rules, allowing Johnson & Johnson to claim that its talc was asbestos-free, as long as it contained less than 1% asbestos.
Of course, Johnson & Johnson helped write those rules. So while we're using hazmat suits to remove the asbestos from our homes, Johnson & Johnson was telling women it's safe for their bodies.
Unbelievable. So if you've used talcum powder for feminine hygiene and contracted ovarian cancer, call Underlaw at 1-800-RX-WATCH.
They've already won several large verdicts against Johnson & Johnson for women just like you.
Call Underlaw at 1-800-RX-WATCH. That's 1-800-RX-WATCH or go to rxwatch.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
RhinoShield is far superior to even the best traditional exterior house paint. RhinoShield is 8 to 10 times thicker than paint and comes with a 25-year transferable warranty. RhinoShield is the only ceramic coating company that has been chosen by Disney, This Old House, and three times on HGTV's Curb Appeal, where every episode is concentrated on unpainted brick, bonds and seals to stucco, wood, hardy, block, color lock, masonite, and more. No better product for those steel aluminum sided homes that have become, you know, chalky and tired looking. We coat sloped and flat roofs to extend their lives too. After 15 years, we've got a great reputation and a superior product. As long as it's affordable, why wouldn't you do it? Before you make the costly mistake of painting with traditional paint, you'd be best served to call Rhino Shield today. We are the experts and our evaluations are free. 877-25-RHINO or 877-25-RHINO.com. Tell them, ladies.
Rhino Shield. Never paint your house again. Rhino Shield.
Shows on a mission.
Shows on a mission.
To bring you the information.
Information.
You're on 97.1 FM Talk, St. Louis.
Welcome back to On the Money. Brought to you by the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel.
This is On the Money. I'm Eric Robert, Director of Investments with the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel. You know, if you're concerned about all of the things going on in the world right now and how it might impact your investments going forward, it is time for a portfolio review. At least as we, you know, as we speak here, markets are hanging in there. And despite all of this stuff, you know, going on in the Mideast, it's just not... it's not had the same impact I think a lot of people might have expected on markets and so far the economy.
I've been a little surprised, Eric.
I have too.
I really have.
I have too. And I think that if you're concerned about it, though, and you're losing sleep over it, we're going to give you some tips in this segment on how to manage getting through, you know, really just any time where there's just a lot going on in the news and the world, and how to manage that a little bit better. But an important thing to do is if you just have this kind of pit in your stomach, you don't know what to do with your portfolio as a result, it's a sign it may be time to meet with a professional and really understand what risk is in your portfolio. Maybe you're fine, and maybe you just need somebody to run you through what you have, and so you understand what your actual, you know, volatility looks like. In other cases, maybe you're not, and it is possible to say, you know, we don't make guarantees in most contexts in what we do, but we can help you make better decisions based on probabilities. And if you go, listen, I've seen it happen before when my portfolio dropped by $250,000 over the course of a few months, and it just made me want to throw up, and I said I'd never do it again. The wrong response to that is to think next time I'll know to sell. That's not going to be a good plan. The right response to that is to go, there's going to be volatility in any portfolio, but you can manage that volatility. And if 25% on a $1 million portfolio is too much for you to handle, then just don't set yourself up where that's what's going to happen to you. You don't have to. On the other hand, other people can handle that just fine. And you might be looking for higher long-term returns. We can help you do that as well. But we want you to fully understand what you're getting into. Go to clearpathinvesting.com. Clearpathinvesting.com.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Number is 636-695-2650. We'd love to talk to you.
Absolutely. So Barry Ritholtz is one of our favorite authors that we kind of keep track of. You'll see him on TV sometimes as well. Had an article this last week titled "Manage the Noise," and a lot of times you'll hear people say to ignore the noise. And I believe Ritholtz himself has said that in the past. And he chastises himself in the intro to this article for being not clear enough with people, because simply burying your head in the sand and ignoring what's happening, if you are truly a very long-term investor and you have kind of a steel-girded disposure to what's going on, maybe that'll work out for you. But for most people, you do kind of need to know what's going on in the world to make decent decisions with regard to how you're managing your portfolio. But you need to know how to manage all of the information that's coming at you. And he has a few tips in this article that I thought were helpful here. Bob, you want to go for the first one?
Sure. The first one is to tune out noise. And that's a tough one. He mentions the fact that nobody can just tune everything out. Obviously, we can't. There's so much going on out there with media, TV, radio, you know, the whole nine yards. It's just gotten tougher and tougher to figure out what is what you should be listening to and what you shouldn't be.
Well, you think of all of, the media is in a place where they have to have stuff to talk about every single day, and typically more than one topic over the course of a day.
That's right.
And that's whether it's actually important or not.
Oh, they're going to couch it whatever way they want to couch it to make you listen and catch your attention.
Yeah, so that's why Barry Ritholtz says you need to manage what he calls your information hygiene. An important piece of context to have whenever you're thinking about all of the things that are happening in the world is, where are you getting your news? I'm not going to make judgments, at least here on the air, about where you should be getting your news, although I think there's a lot of thematic alignments with people who often listen to our show, other than On the Money. You should keep getting your news here. Whether you're glued to Fox News all day, or you're glued to MSNBC, or maybe you get most of your news from social media, things like X and what have you, that needs to be something that you account for when you're thinking about, am I actually getting the whole truth on this in either direction? And I'm not picking sides there. I'd say in any one of those sources, you're going to see different ways the information's manipulated and you're not getting the whole story. You've got to take a step back and you're going to read a lot of garbage to try and get some better sense of what's actually going on from a holistic perspective.
Yeah, I like it. I like the way he puts it here. Beware the non-experts, a.k.a. salespeople, who freely share their lack of expertise with the investing public. A lot of that going around out there.
I think his second point here is maybe the most important, which is understand what is and is not already priced in. By the time you're seeing it on the news or all over social media or what have you, you got to remember, markets are forward-looking. Markets respond to news in a heartbeat. And just because the news is now making a big deal out of something, or maybe has been over the last week or so, well, everybody already knows, and it's already priced in most likely. So is that a time to respond to it if it's already priced in? Bob, you want to look at the third one here?
Yeah, activities around your portfolio should be in.
And if you have any questions about that as it applies to your circumstance, of course, you're welcome to get a hold of us at clearpathinvesting.com. Next on the Money, what is it, Bob? 16 ways to make money that are crazy? Something like that.
Something like that. Creative, weird, downright bizarre, the ways that people make extra cash. It's all interesting. Right. You'll like
it. We'll hit on some of these at least next. This is On the Money.
The Freedom 13 remembers the heroes that made the ultimate sacrifice by supporting the veterans still with us. You can make a difference with just $13 a month. It's June for Jared in honor of Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz. Learn more at 971talk.com/talkinaction.
When you're approaching retirement, there are a lot of questions to answer. Do you have enough money to fund your income for life? How should you claim Social Security? And what's your plan for health care and long-term care? Hi, I'm Eric Robert, Director of Investments with the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel and host of On the Money Saturday mornings at 11 on 97.1 FM Talk. Don't leave your retirement to chance. It's crucial to understand and address relevant risks before you retire. Our team can help you get organized, guide you through critical retirement decisions, and create an investment portfolio designed around your needs. To schedule your free retirement plan consultation, go to clearpathinvesting.com. That's clearpathinvesting.com. Or call us at 636-695-2650. That's clearpathinvesting.com or 636-695-2650. Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
If you're looking for the perfect weekend getaway that's close to home here in St. Louis, it's Innsbruck, just to the west of St. Louis, 100-plus lakes, hiking trails, a gorgeous golf course, and plenty of options for living, either full-time or with a vacation home. And this year at Innsbruck, the new Sonnenhaus homes are available. The Tyrolene Sonnenhaus combines the modern exterior of a treehouse with the cozy interior of a cottage. They are awesome, and you can find out more and explore everything about Innsbruck easily at innsbruck-resort.com. That's innsbruck-resort.com. rhinoshield.com.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200-$300.
You're putting gas in your car anyway. Why not get real cash back? If you like free money, download Upside.
I'm saving the cash I earn from using Upside to help pay for a vacation later this year.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code FAME to get an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code FAME for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code FAME for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
You've been listening to the very popular Wellness One for many years, Saturdays and Sundays on 97.1 FM Talk. We're happy to share that we've expanded the show to four times a week. Yes, four times every weekend. Saturday at 10 a.m., Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 9 a.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m. It's the same great show designed to cut through the nonsense and provide you a common sense, science-based strategy for a healthy life. So join TJ and Aaron for Wellness One. Now, four times a week on 97.1 FM Talk.
Welcome back to On the Money, brought to you by the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel.
This is On the Money, and I'm Eric Robert, Director of Investments, and Bob Stockdale here, as always, Senior Vice President of Investments with the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel. And if you would like to avoid having to come up with creative, weird, and downright bizarre ways to make extra cash in retirement, go to clearpathinvesting.com. But we're about to share a few of those creative, weird, and downright bizarre ways that people are trying to put together some scratch. Bob, this is right up your alley, favorite types of things to talk
Isn't
about.
It, though?
So
you know, if people need to be creative, if you're not getting the income that you need, or you want some different ways, come up with ideas.
What's the most odd way that you've had to make money?
Oh my goodness, I have no idea.
You weren't ready for that. All right, well, you think about it, and you can carry on.
I'll think
on
about
with your,
that. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't done anything crazy. These are crazy.
All right, let's go.
Not really crazy. But so an article in BuzzFeed talked about 16 creative, weird, and downright bizarre ways that people have made money. And it'll make you say, why didn't I think of that? So the first one that they point out is one that I thought was interesting. There's a gentleman who takes his van out to the desert, collects tumbleweed, and sells them to Hollywood movie makers and TV studios who need them. He keeps the tumbleweed in a warehouse, and since they never spoil, his only cost is gasoline, storage, and a website. Eventually, he becomes the number one tumbleweed provider to studios around the world.
What a business.
Shipping tumbleweed globally. He made a ton of money doing it, selling to millions of people. So that's... Never would have thought that would work.
I like this one about a young entrepreneur. About 4 years ago, I noticed we started running out of Ziploc bags quickly every week. It turned out that my 10-year-old at the time was mixing gummy bears and worms with Hispanic spices and chamoy sauce. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Then selling them at school for $5 a bag. She was bringing in $100 to $150 a week. She now is about to turn 15, and she has built her candy business and selling in stores in her city.
Not so bad. Yeah. Not so bad. Another one was in medical studies. There's an entire website where you can find studies to participate in. This lady said she actually did several. Her best being one where they had her brace her leg for a month and couldn't use it during that time. The study was to see if a drug would help her muscle growth and in her leg. The bottom line was they paid her $12,000 to do this for 1 month. She said she would do it again. I don't think so.
Yeah.
A month? No,
yeah,
not good.
Yeah, not every month. Here's another one. This person who's lived in the same neighborhood for nearly 20 years.
With researchers around the world.
My unique experience can make the difference of life and death to some of the people in my community.
It is in our stories and data that the answers can be found.
Join Stand Up To Cancer, Count Me In, and thousands of patients like Maeve, Bridget, and Joel in this movement.
For our family.
For our friends.
For us all.
The information is out there. Together we can unlock it. Join in at standuptocancer.org/countmein.
Sometimes an identity threat is a ring of professional hackers. And sometimes it's an overworked accountant who forgot to encrypt their connection while sending bank details.
I need a coffee.
And you need LifeLock, because your info is in endless places. It only takes one mistake to expose you to identity theft. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second. If your identity is stolen, we'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Are you having trouble hearing? Hearing loss can devastate the quality of your life. Now, there's an affordable fix for you or your loved one. Rated the best hearing aids of 2025 by Forbes Health, Audion Hearing has the highest quality hearing aids at the lowest prices, starting at just $98 a pair.
I actually like them better than my old $5,000 hearing aids.
I could not believe how my hearing and life changed.
Join over 1 million happy customers by going to audionhearing.com. That's A-U-D-I-E-N hearing.com.
At your service, it's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on 97.1 FM Talk.
Okay. So I wonder if, do you have any idea if they, when they did this work, if they pulled permits and had drawings and.
Yeah, they had, well, he says he had permits, but she never did get to see them.
Yeah. And so she should have seen them because you basically, when you get permits, you post them on the front of the house, either a front window, front door, you
right.
post it where everybody can see it from the street, sidewalk. Whatever,
right.
So she probably should have known that it was there. And so that leads me to question a little bit, if it didn't have inspections and that wasn't sized properly, that, yeah, there in the beginning, that should have been figured out by a structural engineer on how big that beam needed to be. So
right.
unfortunately now, the situation that she's stuck in is one, they did the contractor did what they said they would do and she paid them for that, even though it wasn't correct. And it's now you're in the battle of whose responsibility was it to make sure that it was proper. And it's a court thing. She's if they
right.
won't just come in and fix it, you'll have no choice but to you have two choices. You either take them to court and try and win and get what you need to fix it financially, or you have it fixed and you just pay for it and you move on and you learn that make sure your ducks are in a row next time and make sure you've got a company that does the plans, that pulls the permits, that you see the permits. And unfortunately, the way our whole system is, it definitely puts more responsibility on the owner just because the way different companies are and the way all this stuff is being done and the things that people are told, there's a lot of responsibility on the homeowner to make sure that they're getting with somebody that's good and reliable and going to do the right thing. And that can be very difficult to figure out.
Yeah, the work he did was really good, you know, like I told her, I'm not a professional, but I know what I'm doing. And I told her that beam wasn't definitely not strong enough to support that ceiling. And I told her, I said, your best option is to go to court and see if the courts will agree with you, you know. And
yeah.
She said, well, I'm just thinking about fixing the cracks, you know. I told her I could do it. I could mud and tape the cracks all the way across and everything. But I told her, I said, it still may crack more.
Yeah, it'll come back. at some point. Maybe it lasts a couple years, maybe not, but at some point those cracks will absolutely come back. Yep. Yeah.
So she's got one that goes from the wall to wall. And you know, and the thing about it is he put some can lights in and he cut a ceiling joist to put a can light in. I said, you can't do that.
Oh my gosh.
Your ceiling's gonna float. I said, yeah. Your ceiling's gonna move and that's gonna create the cracks too. Because she's got not just them cracks from the wall to wall, she's got cracks all over the place.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, cutting through the ceiling joist. Yeah, that's all really, really sad to hear. And they actually make can lights now. We absolutely love them because they're not truly can lights. They're LED light fixtures that are only about a half inch thick, but look exactly like a can light. And you can mount it right to the bottom of that ceiling joist, and it's the same thickness of your drywall, and you don't have to cut that ceiling joist at all anymore for these types of lights to go in. And they work great, and they're dimmable, and you can adjust the different temperatures and how they are and what they do and all that. So, there's definitely some way better solutions, but unfortunately it just sounds like, she got somebody that didn't do the proper upfront planning to figure the project out and really make sure that it's correct and it's going to be built right and got the proper permits so the city can inspect it and make sure that it was done the way that it said and all of that. So, it's going to be a court thing for her. So I wish her luck if she goes that route. May want to just figure out what it takes to fix it and find out and then weigh that cost against going to court. But, hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Mark. We got to take our first break here. We've got Doug online. If you could hold the line, we'll be right back after this on here and see what's going on. Doug, are you there? Can you hear me? Oh, we got – oh, there you go. Doug, there you are.
Okay, my house was built in 94. We've never had this problem before. We had a new roof installed last fall. We are now having problems. All the drywall was put in with screws. In one bathroom, we now have drywall mud is popping off the screw heads. Okay. This is right at a valley over that bathroom. And we used to have the little guides in the valley to guide the water away so it didn't come down in one big rush. Well, when they put the roof on, they didn't put those on. So I have a river that comes down in this valley.
Okay.
And like I said, we've never had this problem before. But now the drywall mud is popping off the screw heads. And I'm going to have to go in repair that. I know I'll have to put new screws in and do all that stuff. But do you think having the little guards up there to divert the water had something to do with it? Or do you think it was the roofing itself when they put on? This is the only place in the house where this is doing this, and it's right over that bathtub. But this particular area, it's about an area about 4 foot long, and the drywall mud is popping off the screw heads. What do you think is causing that?
So do you think that – have you seen any type of – you don't see any water staining or any – kind of shadowing marks or anything around the screws, like a ring where you think
there's
any leaking?
No, that's one of the things I'm thinking, well, if I was getting water in there, it would be getting into the insulation and everything else, and it would eventually come down into the drywall. But I don't see anything like that. It's just a four-foot-long strip where the drywall mud is popping off the screw heads.
Yeah, it is... It is a little suspect if that's the only area doing it, but I would have to think that it probably just happened from the movement of them installing the roof, tearing it off, dropping heavy bundles of shingles onto the roof. And a lot of times when you get a new roof, you'll get some drywall nail pops, and if your drywall wasn't glued and the screw's holding but the drywall's moving, that'll pop that mud off of that screw. So yeah, you're right on with the fix. You want to add a couple screws next to that screw, then make sure they're all tight, and then re-mud, fix, sand, and paint and all that. But I would see, I wonder if is there any attic access where you could kind of look at it from the attic to see if there is any water that maybe you just don't see into the drywall yet.
That would This is 15 foot from the attic access where there's, and I'm serious, I've got 14 inches. I had them put extra insulation in there, and it's 14 foot away, and it's right where the roof is really getting real shallow.
Yeah.
And as far as crawling back there to see it, I don't know.
Probably really tough, and maybe from a distance there might even be something to see from like 10, 14 feet away with a good flashlight and see if it looks like there's anything going on. I would definitely recommend just looking up in there and trying to make sure you don't think there's a leak. But I don't think the diverters to slow the water down, all that, would have anything to do, because basically that water will rush down that valley and it'll just shoot off over the gutter, ruin your landscape, land on your patios, whatever's down there. And if everything's built right with the roof and there's not a leak, it's just going to shoot and overshoot the gutters, it'll cause more foundation problems than drywall problems on the ceiling. So I'm guessing you've just got movement from when they put the roof on, just needs to be repaired.
Yeah, this looks like a river when it rains. It looks like the river just bypassing, and we've got gutter guards up there, and it just goes right past the gutter guards because it comes down in such a rush.
Yep.
So you just think, just go ahead and put new screws in and mud it and everything else.
Yeah, I would. I mean, if it were me, I would definitely see if I could try and make sure there's not a leak from inside the attic, just to double check that. But I believe that's all you're going to end up against is just
fixing
those.
Well, at my age, I don't want to go crawling through my attic.
Yeah,
and maybe putting holes someplace else that I don't need to put holes.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, no problem. You're very welcome. And so next we've got Phyllis on the line. Let's jump to Phyllis and see what's happening. How can we help you, Phyllis?
Hi. I live in the county, and I just have a small, I want to say it's maybe 4x5 porch, whatever is a standard concrete porch with probably three steps. And I had some metal railings, and I've lived here 9 years, so it was here before me. And those railings, you know, all rusted from the footings. And so I wanted to get new aluminum railings of some sort. And I have the top landing of that porch. One corner is starting to crumble where the footing was inserted. So, I mean, I'm really having a hard time finding a company who will take on, I mean, for them, I guess it's a small project, but, you know, to put new railings in, repair that porch, because I'm sure they'd have to take some of that corner out and do their platform or whatever they do to fill it in. So it'll kind of match. But I mean, so how do you find a company that's willing to take on a smaller job?
Well, and the other thing you're up against too is really looking at that concrete, the patio there. Will, if they patch that concrete, will it hold the rail? That's the next question. How does that rail mount to the concrete, and how much repair are they doing to the concrete? Because what you don't want is the repair to not hold the new rail. So, and getting someone to repair concrete is the hardest part, because concrete companies are just going to want to tear that concrete out and replace it. And then you'll have brand new concrete for someone to attach a railing to, or sometimes they core drill down into the concrete to attach like a wrought iron type rail. I guess my question would be, is where that corner's kind of breaking up with the concrete, how thick is that concrete and how much concrete is missing at that corner?
Well, I mean, I haven't taken the pieces out of it. You know, it's crumbled. There's pieces that I could take out and throw away, but I've just left them there. But it's actually where the footing was.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's probably, I don't know, 4 inches thick maybe right there.
Yeah. Yeah, so you might be better off with a an actual wrought iron railing.
Uh-huh.
And not the aluminum, because your aluminum railings are going to mount to the concrete, and they kind of bolt on with these clamps, and then there's a cover that covers all the anchors and how you bolt it to the concrete. Where a wrought iron rail, they can drill a hole into the concrete and use epoxy and put that into the concrete, and that'll hold the rail better, and then you can kind of patch that concrete once the rail's in.
You know, this one had those L-shaped, you know, for your square porch at the top. So I had the railing that went on the left and the right that kind of are L-shaped that they come around to the steps. So, I mean, are you talking about I could have wrought iron just like that all around that porch?
Yes, yep.
And then a railing that goes down for the three steps, because I have fallen down them steps once.
Oh, that's not good.
There's a original railing there. Not only that, I just don't want a mail person or someone delivering something to, you know, fall. And so then what I call just strictly like a railing company.
Yeah, I would start with a railing company. Classic Metal Craft does wrought iron rails, and they do the core drilling, and they may, I mean, you can ask them about like a hydraulic cement, something to kind of patch that concrete, and they may do that because they fill around the holes they drill. And so if it's not too bad, but I definitely understand it's so hard to find people to do small projects, and it is difficult to even perform them at times.
And I didn't want to do a whole new porch because you're talking about $5,000 to $10,000 probably.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and yeah. So that's, you get into a lot getting all new concrete so that you can attach a rail, and that's where I think they might have better luck attaching an actual wrought iron rail, where the cost of your rail will probably be two or three times what it costs for an aluminum rail, but you're still not replacing all the concrete. So it's kind of like this might be more in the middle financially for you rather than replace all the concrete. You want a $10,000 porch and a $2,000 rail, or do you want a $5,000 or $6,000 rail? That's kind of the things that'll happen. And these aren't real numbers, but I'm just kind of associating the size and the percentage differences of those materials and how they install them.
So if you had rails on both sides plus a handrail going down, I mean, are you talking a ballpark of like $3,000 for wrought iron?
I mean, that is definitely hard to say till they look at it, because it wrought iron can depend a lot upon the style and how they make it look how simple it is or how ornate it is. And
right,
the cost will change a lot. So you could be $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, or you could be up to like $8,000 if it gets really neat, ornate, or really, you know, how they make it. Cause they make this stuff and put it together. So it'll depend a lot on what you're picking. Do the simplest thing, it'll have the least amount of investment.
Okay. Yeah. Because they actually create it, so to speak.
Yep. Yeah. So it's not just like sections they buy, like an aluminum rail where it's made at a manufacturer and you buy the sections and you're bolting the post and you're screwing it all together how the manufacturer says. This is actually made, sized, welded. So do they put just a straight little square spindle, or do they twist them, or Do they put some ornate, neat-looking stuff? And they can show you some stuff. You might want to spend a little more and upgrade a little bit if you get something that's really going to look cool and you're like, oh, I love that. And it's just find out how much more that is. You know,
I want to ask you something because you were talking about them pouring down into the concrete.
Uh-huh.
But if they, you know, they wouldn't be able to really do that if that's right where the other footing was and that's where you're, you know, the connection of the L, that little part, and then your longer part for your porch. I mean, how could they pour down in there and put in a new one if it's all crumbled there?
Well, and that's where it depends on the thickness of the concrete and what – if you have 4 inches of concrete and you're missing an inch, then they could still core drill through the 3 inches of concrete, put their post down in it, and epoxy it. And then once your rail's in, they can patch that top inch.
Okay.
So that's kind of my theory, and it may or may not work once they look at it. You may end up needing new concrete because I would be afraid that if you patch it first and trying to attach an aluminum rail, drilling down into it, your patch isn't going to hold. It's not going to hold the rail. You're not going to have a stable rail.
Okay.
All right, Phyllis.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate the call. Great question. Great conversation. We've got Jim on the line. If you could hold on through a real short, quick break here, Jim, we're going to take our middle hour break, and we'll get to Jim and you and everybody else when we return. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Rich Orr is here for you today. We've got plenty going on. We've got all your comments, conversations, topics, questions, whatever your concerns are, 314-436-7900. I'm here to help you out. Today, we've got until the top of the hour, and we've got Jim on the line. Let's get to Jim and see how we can help. Jim, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good. Real quick, I know you were talking about insulation in the attic. I just had that done where it was blown in. There's no floor there. And the entry to get to the attic, you have to go through the closet, and there's only like a 3-foot by 3-foot or less square to get up in there.
Yeah.
But what I like to do is add a floor up there. I was wondering what type of flooring, or, you know, would it just be plywood or what? And also like to add electric.
Oh, okay. So how old is your house?
It's about 70 or 80 years old now.
Okay. So electric... that's the easy part as far as getting an electrician and running some wires, some lights. They can put a switch right inside that attic opening. So when you go up in there, you can turn it on and you kind of like your basement lights up near the top of the roof that you just click it on and you got 2, 3, 4, however many of them you need to kind of illuminate the area. The hard part in an attic like that the hard part too with the flooring is keeping a good insulation value between the main floor or second floor ceiling and then that attic space. The issue we run into is we're calling for up to like an R49 insulation value in our St. Louis area now to separate between the living space and the attic of the home. So that insulation value, depending on the type of insulation you use, is sometimes it's 2 feet thick. And you've got a ceiling kind of rafter joist, or it's either a 2x4 or it's a 2x6. It's a really small board. So if you put plywood on top of that, and your insulation's under it, you've only got 3.5 inches of insulation or 5.5 inches of insulation, which is a really low value between an attic and an actual living space. So the floor in the attic is hard if you're trying to keep that insulation value. And it depends on your situation, maybe attaching stuff to to the trusses or the rafters in framing wise to kind of raise that up above the insulation? Are you just looking to store a few things up there, or why would you like a floor in the attic?
Yes, sir, for storage.
Yeah. So you can consider kind of trying to raise that floor height to store a few things between the trusses with some framing and some plywood to keep that insulation value, because you could have 18 inches of insulation. And even with a blown-in cellulose, the kind of paper type that's a little denser and doesn't stack as thick, even that system is still 8 to 12 inches thick. So it's still double what you have up there in a floor joist to kind of put plywood on. So that's the hard part of storing in an attic. Above garages, it's great because you don't necessarily insulate the ceiling in the garage, because your garage gets hot and cold and all that anyways. So that's why we find a lot of storage above the garage, because there just isn't insulation up there already.
Okay. And what about making this access area larger, or would you have to cut into the wall and everything else, or what would be done there?
Yeah, so to make that larger, you definitely have to you have to figure out the framing with how that roof is framed. If it's trusses, if it's a truss system, you'll never get it any wider than the 22 and a half inches between two trusses, because you'd have to cut through trusses to make that happen. If it's rafter framed at the roof, and then there's ceiling 2x6 or 2x4 ceiling joists that hold up the drywall to the walls, you could do some framing where you have to kind of like double it up, create kind of like some headers to hold the opening, and then you can do the proper framing to make that opening bigger if you wanted it bigger. And the other thing you could consider is finding a space in the house to put in a set of attic stairs, that like the pull down stairs, where you could then kind of walk up the stairs to set stuff up there, to store stuff up there. You do got to be careful what you're storing in an attic, because like on a day like today, if we break the record from 88 and it gets to be 99 or 100 degrees, it could literally, if you don't have great attic ventilation, it could be 130, 140 degrees in that attic.
Wow.
So you got to think about what you're storing there too.
Okay.
And it can get very cold in that attic when it's winter, when it's 32 degrees outside and it's freezing inside that attic.
Wow. Okay.
So that's the next thought of when you store stuff. What exactly are you putting up there? I wouldn't put a mink coat up there.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right. Right. All right. Well, I appreciate your time. You helped me make a decision. I think I'm just going to let it go.
Well, I didn't mean to take you there, but sometimes that's where we end up, and that ends up being the best decision, and maybe finding a different spot to store stuff would work out better. So appreciate it, Jim.
Okay, take care.
Yep, you too. Good thought and good question, and we definitely get a lot of thoughts and topics about remodeling the attic, maybe adding living space up there, adding storage up there. And it can definitely get into some difficult projects that really end up, it's kind of like building a little room addition to get space up there, and these projects get pretty large at times. But going back a little bit to what Phyllis was talking about, in trying to, how do you get someone to do small projects? And that is definitely a hardship in our industry, because a lot of people that handyman and they do these small projects, and not all of them have enough experience and knowledge to really understand when they're getting themselves into something that may or may not work and may or may not be the best thing possible to correct a solution or come up with a repair. So as you get into a company like ours, like Mosby Building Arts, we have a lot of very, you know, there's over 130 people. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of experience in this industry amongst all of us. So we can play off each other and we can figure things out. And when we don't know something for sure, even myself, I'll end up going to someone else and being like, hey, what do you think about this? How do we do this? What would it take to get this done? And how can we get this the best way? And so when you have that, it's better people to do that smaller job, but then more cost can come with that. And that becomes a hardship because it's like, boy, it gets really expensive to do a really small project. And from our end of things, how do you schedule? How do you maintain? How do you get things done? We do a lot of small projects here at Mosby, and the hardship comes into, especially if you're looking at really small projects where you're talking time and material type things, where they're like, just show up, do the work, charge me what you had to buy, charge me the hours. Well, but if you're trying to schedule large kitchen renovations and then you've got these little things and you're not sure how long they're going to take or if something's going to come up during them, it gets really hard to schedule those type of projects and get them done. And that's exactly why we have now started our SAM service at Mosby, where, you know, home inspections, looking over the home, educating homeowners about the home, but then being able to schedule and do small handyman hour type projects like that during that service. It's about knowing that you're going to do it, and it's about figuring it out and knowing when and having available people so that you're not putting off someone else's project at the same time. And it's a difficult thing for a company to do, and that's why a lot of companies, they just say, nope, we don't do small things. And a lot of them, they're like, well, I'm going to take advantage of that, and I'm only going to do small things, and I'm just going to be the person that does it. But finding that person and finding a really good person to get that accomplished, that is the exact difficult task that Phyllis was asking about, is how do you find that person? And I tell you, finding that company or that person that will be that way and that will be inexpensive, that can do it for less because of size, or maybe it's just them and they're doing it on their own, kind of in their retirement or something. It comes into question the background and what did you do before and how good are you going to be at this? Because the just what you receive from that type of person work can be the best thing ever, or it could be the worst thing ever, and you just don't know the experience and everything they have. So finding that person that does that is kind of like winning the lottery if they are good at it. And hold on to that person if you can find them, but it is difficult, and that's why people turn to us, because it is difficult. And if you don't know somebody that can help you, if you don't have a family member that can do stuff, then you're kind of there, then you're kind of stuck. And it can be hard to do, and you could be let down a lot trying to figure it out and get people to do that stuff. But hey, we're going to get into our final break here. 314-436-7900. Everybody, we are back. Home Improvement Show, final segment, final thoughts. Let's get to Mike and see what's happening there. Mike, hey, how can we help you today?
Yes, I'm purchasing a house that has a new wooden floor, engineer wood floor throughout the house, kitchen, living room, bedrooms. What do I have to do to protect the floor with different types of furniture or refrigerator on it? Do I need coasters or some sort of pads that would help it, or do I even need them?
Well, no, I mean, definitely on the table, chairs, it is a good idea to make sure that you have good pads, either the felt type of pads or the hard plastic ones will work good too. I always advise like trying not to drag things around too much, because even if you have like good pads that have worked for a long time, well, if something starts moving or coming loose, so if you need to move something quite a bit temporarily, make sure you pick it up and kind of carry it. Refrigerators fine. I would just look at putting something down that like a thin hard cardboard, or they make these kind of plastic thin strips that you put down, so when you pull that refrigerator out, if you go back there to change it, to clean it, to do anything, you're pulling it out on something on top of that floor rather than on that floor, because there's not you can do to the actual refrigerator, but you can put something down to definitely help that. And same thing everywhere else. Just look at what's on the bottom of that furniture, and using felt pads and all of that is a great idea to help not scratch that floor, because it can scratch. It's a good hard surface, but it definitely can. Even pets, when small size, will have less marks. Medium size, you get a Great Dane in there, and eventually you better keep them nails good, because you will start to see things. And then the other thing I'd say is how you clean it. You don't need a lot of cleaners. You do not want to use like oils. You do not want to use like a Murphy's oil soap or anything that's putting a film on that, a little water and vinegar, something like that. Light mopping, just like very damp. My wife uses the spin mop thing. It's kind of like you put the mop in the water and there's a spinning device that you put the mop in, and it's kind of this round head, and you push it with your foot and it spins that, because you want that to be very damp. You don't want a lot of water on it. So a little vinegar and water with the spin mop type thing, or just when cleaning, just using the dust cleaners that you just put the pad on there and just pick up the little debris and the dust. Do that, and then do your mopping not so often, once a month or once every couple months, something like that, when you get stuff.
Should I be concerned about weight of something? Like if I get a large, heavy sled bed and I put the pads underneath, that shouldn't be a problem over a year or two, sitting in one spot, kind of denting the floor a bit, or should I move it, or what?
On an engineered wood floor, it really shouldn't, because it is kind of a hard pressed kind of plywood. So something would have to be pretty heavy to really dent that a lot. So that I wouldn't be real concerned about.
Great. Well, I thank you for the information. You answered numerous questions I had.
Oh, good. So. Perfect. Yeah, no problem. Appreciate the call. Appreciate the question. And when we talk about, I was going back talking about the small projects and who does what. And so the different things that we do now at Mosby Building Arts, imagine at the end of your project, when you have a project like that done, you get a list of things that are recommended, like recommended cleaners for different products in your home, what to do after construction to keep up with things and all this. So a lot of information, a lot of setting great expectations and exceeding, the common practices of what we see every day is what we're trying to do. It's what I'm trying to kind of pass on here. And it's the value and the different things that we do that people just absolutely love. In what we do and how we do it, and you get a lot of this stuff. So I do it here on Saturdays. I do it all during the week for Mosby Building Arts, and I can't wait to talk to everybody next Saturday. We had some great calls, some great conversations, some great questions. I'll have plenty for you next week. So be good to each other, be good to your homes, and I will look forward to talking to you all next Saturday.